Hi, and welcome to Infill, where we talk housing politics and policy. I'm Laura Foote, YIMBY Action.
I'm Sam Moss from Mission Housing.
I'm Scott Feeney, YIMBY Volunteer.
And today we have special guest, Katie, former supervisor Katie Tang. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you very much.
So starting out, so you are heading off into the sunset. How relaxed do you feel right now?
I feel very good about leaving the term, but also happy about the experience that I had, and especially working on housing issues.
Yeah, so you helped pass, kind of our first major upzoning bill, the local version of the Affordable Housing Density Bonus Program, which had a great name that was very catchy, but then you luckily renamed it Home SF. Can you talk kind of about that experience, I guess? I mean, I think that we had you on the podcast a while ago talking about that legislation, and now it's been in law for, I guess, about a year now. And how do you sort of feel like that experience went?
Well, it was a very interesting journey, actually, because when I first started out working on it, I had no idea I was going to get myself into something, you know, to create a local density bonus program. My whole goal was, how do we use land use and zoning policies to try to incentivize development on the west side of town, especially along transit corridors and commercial corridors where we hadn't historically seen a whole lot of growth there. And I felt like it was a very reasonable goal. And then somehow it kind of meshed with the timing and the need to create a local density bonus program. And, you know, I have to admit, it was very difficult when we first started out with that conversation. It was probably the first piece of legislation where you saw that planning department staff went around to every single supervisorial district to talk about a piece of legislation. And people came out with pitchforks, you know.
Oh, those meetings were crazy.
They were very interesting. And, you know, not only were people adverse to just growth, and you really saw that, NIMBYism come out. And it was also very complicated. So then it was even more difficult for people to understand and very easy to attack. So I think after probably a year of working on it, we decided, well, you know what? It's not that what we're doing is bad. It's maybe we're just not talking about it in a very smart way. So then finally, I would say like a year or two into it, then we started pushing the idea of, you know, everyone deserves a home. And what are we going to do about that missing middle class household that that is moving away from San Francisco? And then next thing you know, during the special mayoral election, everyone was talking about middle income households. And so then it became this like thing that was a problem that all of us need to solve. And then I think people finally understood what the value of home SF.
So do you feel like, I guess, you know, looking back now, there was, you know, we got momentum and we passed home SF, and yet it's sort of not at scale with the scale of the problem. And this has been kind of my constant struggle with the Board of Supervisors, is that even when they get to a point where where the board will admit what the problem is, the solutions are just not at scale at all.
Or they take like a year to 12 years longer. Like, thanks, Eastern Neighborhoods Plan.
Yeah, so maybe a related question is why do you think that, what do you think needs to be done to get more developments to be using Home SF?
Well, so it actually about a year after Home SF took effect, we had, you know, done more roundtable discussions with some developers and asked them, why aren't you using Home SF, right? Why are you using the state density bonus law instead? And frankly, it was just much more attractive to use the state one in terms of, you know, how generous it is, right? And so then we actually went back and we recently tweaked and adjusted the Home SF program so that developers have three different options within Home SF. And so I think that we're going to constantly be needing to kind of pay attention to what those issues are and listen to those developers and figure out where we can make adjustments and actually do those. And frankly, it was easier for us to go back and do that, you know, about a year later versus during that process, because it was already difficult to try to get to the finish line in the first place, right? And so even though, yes, I probably along with you would like for things to move faster and for us to have try to tackle those things earlier, you know, the reality is we've got 11 members of this board, 11 different opinions. Some don't want development at all. And so where's that middle ground? And that middle ground does not always equal progress, right? So it's a compromise.
Do you have advice for us or for sort of anybody who wants to get more housing built across the city about how to sort of move that conversation, you know, with your colleagues?
I think, and this is just my own opinion, I think that it's hard when you have kind of a blanket solution for the entire city. I think that you have to go kind of neighborhood by neighborhood or come up with a couple of different development ideas. Like I know that there's been that sort of domicity idea put out there and so forth. But maybe you need to have a couple so that it can be custom tailored to certain neighborhoods, right? Because frankly, there are just people in neighborhoods that just don't want anything to happen. And so you're going to have to scale down some of our dreams, right? Sadly.
I don't know if I agree with scaling down dreams, but I think that there is some value to having a conversation citywide. Is what I've learned from like what Minneapolis did with their comprehensive plan 2040 is kind of like they do have a minimum zoning for the whole city, but they also did outreach to like every neighborhood and like talked to every neighborhood, and they were like, you know, how can we make this work for you? So
people are nicer in Minneapolis.
I don't know. I do think that like, where's the playing field? Is this conversation, right? Are we having a citywide conversation, or are we letting each neighborhood make decisions about what it wants independent of what the other, like there has been this tradition of each supervisor getting to sort of run their little fiefdom and decide and making the deals that happen within their own district and kind of, you know, you had the authority to be, well, I'm a West Side supervisor, so we're going to do something that's going to focus on building housing on the West Side. You know, but there hasn't been this sort of citywide conversation about how do each of the neighborhoods affect one another.
I think, there's value and there needs to be that conversation citywide. I just think that when we talk about sort of the actual approaches and how you're going to implement that, we need to have a couple of different tools though. And yes, although we could say, yes, it would have been lovely if SBA 27, you know, whatever helped up zone, you know, our entire city, but that was just frankly not going to be possible, right, given the outrage that came from a lot of these neighbors. So what are some of the sort of key solutions that we can implement? And I would say that I don't consider it sort of like, oh, we're just letting each district kind of do its own thing and we have our own fiefdoms. I do think that geographically speaking in terms of the topography and so forth, that there are differences that we all have and that we do need to kind of respect. But I think, yeah, this is where probably I'm okay with slightly slower progress to ease people into these ideas. But I understand that there might be others who want to see broader change happen quicker. But, you know, we have seen with the adoption of Central Soma Plan recently and just the incredible growth in, you know, in the downtown area, that will continue. But how do we continue that conversation in the other neighborhoods? That's been the more challenging thing that I've been trying to crack that nut. And, it's still a work in progress.
Yeah, I mean, bringing up Central Soma, it was interesting to watch the Board of Supervisors actively decide to take on that quantity of jobs growth. And we're all talking about the jobs housing imbalance, and the only sort of real objection that was brought up by a supervisor during that was Supervisor Feuer bringing up the need for schools. But like, no one was talking about how this was going to really exacerbate the jobs housing imbalance. And like saying, and therefore, you know, we need to do another version of, you know, the Affordable Housing Density Bonus Program, or therefore we need to, you know, there just wasn't any thinking of doing more housing to compensate for it. Go ahead.
Sorry,
disagree.
I would disagree, because at the end of the conversation, that definitely came out a lot with Supervisor Kim. I would have to say, I think because it was such a marathon of a process to create this plan, that, you know, I mean, frankly, a lot of people were exhausted from just doing, working on this for so long and doing the environmental review and then by that time, things have changed, right? At first, when it was maybe first being worked on, it was a huge jobs focus in this economy in San Francisco. And then now fast forward like 8 years later, it became housing. So that shift, I think, occurred, but it was a little bit too late. But it wasn't, I don't think it was anyone's fault. It was more like, it just took so long. And then we're like, oh, wow, and we've arrived at the end of this process, and housing is now the issue.
I guess, I mean, it's like it's nobody's fault, but it's everybody's responsibility.
And then
yeah,
also,
yeah, sure.
Mean, it felt a lot like everyone would listen, like, oh yeah, there's a jobs housing balance problem. We know that. But also, we said 8 years ago that we would start doing this, and we can't pivot. Like, when you're, you know, as a supervisor, from my perspective, it seemed like everyone agreed there was a housing issue, but that, you know, like you said, like you'd worked on it for so long that
it was on autopilot.
Yeah, that it was on autopilot. But like, I mean, looking back, like I brought up the Eastern Neighborhoods Plan. I don't know anyone in the Eastern Neighborhoods that likes the Eastern Neighborhoods Plan or remembers that it was, you know, how it happened. Like, is that frustrating as a legislator?
Oh, absolutely. And I see these actually how it even comes up in appeals for projects as well, right? You get folks saying like, well, why are we using an EIR that is outdated all of a sudden, right? I mean, I think that's the problem with some of these plans is that they were formed thinking that we would be able to kind of fast track projects as long as they met certain requirements, right? And that if you meet X, Y, and Z that was spelled out ahead of time, that you're good to go. Well, that's not really the case. I don't think that's really been happening. And so I think that the problem is that some of these plans take so long to form, and then by the time you're done, all the sort of issues that you were trying to tackle from the beginning of the process is different now. And so I think we as a city need to rethink these kind of area-wide plans and what they really mean and what we're hoping to really achieve out of them.
You know, this is why I think it's interesting you say like the city needs to rethink, because what I hear quietly from a lot of city level legislators, city council members, especially down in the peninsula, is that they're kind of grateful that the state is coming in and saying, you're not going to be on the hook for these decisions, right? Like they're like a little bit quietly grateful that the decision making is being taken away from them, because they don't want to have to take these hard votes where people come out and yell at them. And so it's like, well, I'm so sorry, my hands are tied, you know, the state passed this law, and they're kind of grateful for that shift.
Yeah. And like that's one of the things that a lot of people seem to be excited about the new version of SB 27, the More Homes Act, is that it'll, like, a lot of local legislators secretly, from what we've been hearing, secretly want it. I don't know how you feel on that.
Yeah, are you allowed
you
to admit?
Yeah. Yeah, you can admit it now, Katie.
I mean, no, I can absolutely believe that, right? For someone like me who is very openly pushing for some growth in our neighborhood, right? Like, I appreciate that. At the same time, I also understand that there'd be some level of just, I mean, I don't want to say like local control, but just some sort of input at least. You know, I think there's a balance to it, but yes, I can imagine it would make a lot of people feel better, especially in dealing with constituents that are more adverse to this. So,
yeah, what percentage of your inbox is about parking?
Oh gosh, I mean, well, when it was about a muni project, it was absolutely, you know, every day about something about parking. Can't take the parking away.
Well, we could. I mean, we could take the parking. I'm just saying.
We could. Well, I did support the removal of the citywide parking minimum.
Thank you for that.
Yes, thank
Very
you.
Very much appreciated.
Yeah, that was great. I was glad you supported that.
So pulling back, what do you feel like? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, but as I said in public meetings as well, and will continue to say, although I supported removal of parking minimums, I still think it needs to go hand in hand with a better public transportation system. I mean, if people cannot rely on muni, they will need to drive, especially when they live in neighborhoods like ours, right, on the west side of town. So that's just something drastic needs to be done there.
So that is a really good point, Katie, regarding the, you know, lack of also talking about the need for better public transportation. I think that one of the frustrating things, just to pivot to another fun thing to talk about, the red lanes. I don't know if you've heard of these, but they're BRT red lanes. Is that something that you've heard of? I've been frustrated about the fact that, you know, people are mad that the tech buses are using the red lanes, and that's all well and good, but I mean, it never comes with, we can't let these private companies use the red lanes, and so we're going to quintuple the amount of public buses that are available. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, for certain areas and parts of town, the red lanes are absolutely crucial, right? When you talk about 38 or whatever it is downtown, it's really important that they exist and that it makes room for the buses to go. And so for me, I am from the perspective that it should be our public transportation system that fully utilizes it, because otherwise if, you know, companies like Chariot or Lyft or Uber or whatever else use it, then you are essentially taking away that customer base from Muni, because they're like, well, I can just hop on this thing and also get in the red transit only lane, right? So, I mean, I'm of the mindset that where they exist, they should only be to serve public transportation.
So just pulling back, what do you think what would you recommend for your fellow, former, you know, incoming board of supervisors? What do you think are important themes that we need to be pushing in 2019? What do you think is going to get us kind of the change that we need to see?
Well, I think it is really interesting time because, you have, for example, a new District 6 supervisor coming in, but a lot of the project, kind of approvals have been made. Central SOMA has been done, right? So it's going to be kind of a monitoring of the situation and how things are actually getting built, right? So I think that's kind of a different dynamic than we've maybe had in the past, like 8 years. For the West Side, I would hope that there would be continuance of this, a conversation around how do we creatively create more housing around transit corridors, and commercial corridors, because I think that our commercial corridors are also going to be dying off if we don't have more foot traffic and people living in these areas. There was that nice piece that was written recently, I think, in Joel Engardio's column about just kind of like the rebirthing of some of these commercial corridors, but they need to be paired with housing. I think that, Supervisor Yee has a lot of housing that's coming in the pipeline for District 7, which will be interesting to watch. But I think, you just have to keep on, I think there's going to be changing dynamic and conversations around the state level, and that will also change the conversation in San Francisco as well. And hopefully it won't be the sort of, just the pitchforks and that's it, and then shut it down. That happened this past year.
Have you been following the CASA Compact, and what do you think about that?
I'm sorry,
the CASA Compact, the, regional housing conversation about, yeah.
With those damn pro-growth affordable housing developers that you can't trust?
No, I haven't followed as closely as I should, but yes, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, so it's one of the big regional conversations. I mean, this is another sort of, it's interesting to me, like this kind of disconnect between the conversation at the regional and state level and the San Francisco conversation. Because
like it's coming,
yeah.
Whether anyone that legislates in San Francisco likes it or not,
because so it's a bunch of regional. It's through MTC, and it'll be up at ABAG. A compromise that is sort of saying, okay, we need to have three kind of fundamentals of increasing funding for subsidized affordable housing, doing a lot to protect existing tenants, and doing a lot to build a lot more housing. And it's setting out all these principles of how to, you know, maybe do a regional spending measure, maybe do, you know, different kinds of tenants protections that could be proposed for statewide legislation, and also supporting things like SB 50. And you know, I mean, and Jane Kim voted for it. So I was like, okay, like,
After going on a kind of a diatribe.
You know what? She voted for it. So that is fine. She can say whatever she wants and then vote for it.
We care about virtue on the podcast. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear our San Francisco representative voted for it.
if I could go back to, you mentioned Supervisor Yee's got a lot of housing coming to his district. I've heard that there's a really awesome housing project being built at the Balboa Reservoir, so that is true. but I will say, as one of the developers on the reservoir, you know, back to this, like, we need to talk to every neighborhood and let the neighborhoods in a little bit have their fiefdom. Like, I've been surprised that, you know, because usually a developer will go to a supervisor and be like, what do we need to do? We'll only focus on this neighborhood. We won't care about anything else. And with the reservoir, we've been like begging. We've been saying, this is a citywide issue. Let's have more people come. Let's let all the supervisors have a say and not just have it be. And there was almost like we were laughed at, like, haha, that's cute. But yeah. No, we don't want to have a say. And I've been frustrated that even when we tried to give the opportunity for other supervisors to and neighborhoods to chime in, like, they were not only like against it, but they thought that we were joking. Do you feel like there's ever a chance where we're going to be able to have a citywide conversation? Because it turns out the Balboa Reservoir is only like 3 miles away from North Beach, so there's that.
Oh well, I mean, I am not aware of that dynamic. I think that your strategy is smart. I'm not aware, and I don't know that I've been approached about trying to even weigh in on Balboa.
Well,
Reservoir.
We don't have to approach Katie. We know you support it.
But I think your strategy is actually very smart, and people should absolutely want to weigh in. However, I know it can be uncomfortable, right, for some people. And there is that level of deference to the district supervisor, and that does exist. You see it happen. It's been written about, whatever. It is true, right? And so I think that some people just don't want to publicly put themselves out there, you know, whereas maybe that district supervisor hasn't had a chance to fully formulate his thoughts on everything. It's more complicated. And maybe there's, I don't know, for whatever cases there might be pending appeal, so he can't really weigh in, right? So I think we just have to understand that reality of it, and not just talk about Balboa Reservoir, but just in general, right? Because people have certainly wanted me to weigh in on certain projects that will be up for appeal, and then I can't give an opinion beforehand, right? So then you can't really expect like other supervisors to do the same either, because they're going to have to vote too. So again, there's that dynamic underlying it. There's also the dynamic of maybe the district supervisor being that lead negotiator, right, on certain things about the project. And so then they're not going to be able to come out swinging about their perspective on the project until they've wrapped up whatever deal or elements of the deal that they want done. I think you just have to somehow work around that.
As we wrap up, what do you think the biggest change that you think San Francisco needs to do in order to achieve the goals of affordability?
Oh, gosh, that is so multifaceted, because I think one is probably an attitude change, right? but in terms of just how do we make it easier to get projects through in the first place, like just our existing systems, right? I think there needs to be a huge dramatic shift within all of our permitting agencies collaboratively. The interdepartmental processes, they take way too long. And then again, by the time you start something and then you finish something, so much has changed, right? So that needs to be sped up, be more efficient. And then I think that in terms of policymakers is, yes, looking at this not only from a San Francisco or district perspective, but from a regional perspective as well. So I think that not only do we want to advocate for housing here, but we also need to maybe work with partners in other jurisdictions, because it is, as you pointed out rightly so, that it is a regional problem.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking now about the More Homes Act, the new version of 827. And even if that did nothing to San Francisco, just unlocking housing in San Mateo County would be a huge deal. I did want to go back to something we were talking about earlier about how, and I guess it relates to what you just said too, about how like it takes a really long time to do anything. And by the time we're done, like circumstances have changed. Like that was the case with kind of Central SoMa, where there was more of a jobs emphasis during, because of the recession. And I actually advocated a little bit around Central SoMa for more housing to be in the plan and change the job housing ratio in that plan. And a lot of the reason that was given to me for why that couldn't be done was because of CEQA and how we had already done the EIR, so we couldn't like wait 3 years to do another EIR. And in listening to what the Minneapolis council member Lisa Bender said on another podcast recently, she used to be a San Francisco planner, and she said that they couldn't have possibly done, she thought, their citywide upzoning if they had CEQA. So in what sense did like CEQA tie your hands with doing home SF? Like, was that something that really delayed home SF, or was a barrier there?
I think for HomeSF it was different. It wasn't really CEQA. It was actually just the sort of the new concept that was introduced to a lot of people's minds that made it really, really difficult. But I think with Central SOMA, absolutely. I mean, and so many other things, CEQA is something that I would love to see reformed. I think some of the San Francisco planners were trying to be smart in terms of kind of the range of housing units that they would include as part of the environmental review. And they really try to push the boundaries at the end of that process as they were trying to add more housing to the plan. But I think that, yes, that's something that absolutely really is like the number one consideration in terms of timing and whether you would try to redo something or not. So, you know, hey, if you want to tackle CEQA reform, that could be something to work on.
You're the land use attorney.
That would help us a lot.
So do you have any last words for your fellow supervisors as they head into office and the pipeline looks like it's completely dead and we're not going to be building any housing this year?
Oh, gosh. Well, I do implore them that if they really want to talk about inclusivity in our city and welcoming everyone from all communities, that they need to really look inwards, right, and help steer that, lead that conversation. Because if they don't, who will, right? I mean, of course we'll have you, but in terms of the people who are the policymakers, right, they need to be the ones to lead that conversation. So, for example, if I didn't start that on the West Side in District 4, would we have had even an inkling of a conversation? Probably not, right? Because no one's going to want to say, hey, I want to build more housing until Melee came along, right?
Yeah, right. We do.
But, yes, yeah, so that's what I would recommend. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank you, Katie, for making HomeSF happen. I think that maybe some YIMBYs are a little bit impatient with it because we want like more projects to be using it. But I think that even just having it out there, like, it's changed the conversation, and we can go in and tweak it as you did recently over the past year and try to get more housing out of it. But just having it there is a big step. It's kind of like how SB 35, you know, Scott Wiener's streamlining bill, hasn't really been used by a lot of projects yet, but it's on the books. It's being used in a few important cases, and you know, there's a possibility to strengthen it. So I really appreciate you kind of being the first West Side supervisor in recent memory to actually advocate for upzoning and more density.
Yeah,
so thank you
very
much.
Thank you very much.
Oh, maybe the last
you.
One for
thank
a little
you all.
While.
And yes, please.
Oh, come on, let's be more optimistic. I want to give the new supervisors a chance.
Thank you, Katie.
Okay, thank you all so much. It's been a great pleasure working with all of you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to Infill, recorded at the YIMBY Clubhouse at 1260 Mission in San Francisco, California.